Escuelas Oficiales de Idiomas de Andalucía. Comprensión oral. Inglés. Nivel avanzado C1. Tarea 1. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
Extract 0. Bipin Rawat, India's Chief of Defence Staff, was killed in a helicopter crash. Foul play is not suspected.
Extract 1.
Pedro Castillo, the new left-wing president of Peru, avoided impeachment after Congress voted against a motion to proceed. Mr. Castillo's supporters, of whom there are a diminishing number in the country, called the impeachment proposal a right-wing coup attempt. Protesters, both for and against Mr. Castillo, took to the streets.
Extract 2.
Chile became the latest country in Latin America to legalize gay marriage. This came 2 weeks before a presidential election in which one of the frontrunners has argued that society works best with heterosexual couples.
Extract 3.
A military court in Myanmar found Aung San Suu Kyi guilty of violating COVID restrictions. She held a campaign rally and disturbing public order. Her party's Facebook page objected to the military coup against her in February. For these ridiculous charges, she faces 2 years in prison. For others yet to be heard, she faces a life behind bars. Her party won election by a landslide in 2020, but is now largely in hiding.
Extract 4.
Rohingya refugees filed a class action lawsuit against Facebook's parent company, Meta, in the United States. They are seeking $150 billion in compensation, alleging that the company did not do enough to stop others from using its platform to incite violence against Rohingyas in Myanmar, where they have been so brutally persecuted that hundreds of thousands have fled. If successful, the suit would be unprecedented.
Extract 5.
Najib Razak, Malaysia's former prime minister, lost an appeal against a 12-year jail term for corruption. American authorities say more than $1 billion has passed through Mr. Najib's bank accounts. Mr. Najib, who still hopes to return to mainstream politics, can make one more appeal in Malaysia's federal court.
Extract 6.
Western officials sounded pessimistic as talks over the future of the nuclear deal signed between Iran and six world powers resumed in Vienna. America accused Iran of reneging on compromises it had agreed to in previous rounds of talks. Iran has accelerated its nuclear program in violation of the deal.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
Extract 0.
Bipin Rawat, India's chief of defense staff, was killed in a helicopter crash. Foul play is not suspected.
Extract 1.
Pedro Castillo, the new left-wing president of Peru, avoided impeachment after Congress voted against a motion to proceed. Mr. Castillo's supporters, of whom there are a diminishing number in the country, called the impeachment proposal a right-wing coup attempt. Protesters, both for and against Mr. Castillo, took to the streets.
Extract 2.
Chile became the latest country in Latin America to legalize gay marriage. This came 2 weeks before a presidential election in which one of the frontrunners has argued that society works best with heterosexual couples.
Extract 3.
A military court in Myanmar found Aung San Suu Kyi guilty of violating COVID restrictions. She held a campaign rally and disturbing public order. Her party's Facebook page objected to the military coup against her in February. For these ridiculous charges, she faces 2 years in prison. For others yet to be heard, she faces a life behind bars. Her party won election by a landslide in 2020, but is now largely in hiding.
Extract 4.
Rohingya refugees filed a class action lawsuit against Facebook's parent company, Meta, in the United States. They are seeking $150 billion in compensation, alleging that the company did not do enough to stop others from using its platform to incite violence against Rohingyas in Myanmar, where they have been so brutally persecuted that hundreds of thousands have fled. If successful, the suit would be unprecedented.
Extract 5.
Najib Razak, Malaysia's former prime minister, lost an appeal against a 12-year jail term for corruption. American authorities say more than $1 billion has passed through Mr. Najib's bank accounts. Mr. Najib, who still hopes to return to mainstream politics, can make one more appeal in Malaysia's federal court.
Extract 6.
Western officials sounded pessimistic as talks over the future of the nuclear deal signed between Iran and six world powers resumed in Vienna. America accused Iran of reneging on compromises it had agreed to in previous rounds of talks. Iran has accelerated its nuclear program in violation of the deal.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 1. Tarea 2. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
Throughout history, people have been obsessed with youth. We have found Botox. In Hollywood especially, female celebrities are expected to stay youthful, but not in a noticeable way. If we can tell someone had work done, we shame them. But it's amazing that we not just expect women to look young and beautiful, but effortlessly so. When I was younger, I was extraordinarily judgmental about cosmetic procedures. I didn't understand why people would do this to themselves. And, you know, of course, I knew that women were judged, but I didn't consider the toll that that judgment can take on you, especially as you get older. So to my younger self, I would say, mind your own business when it comes to people's faces and bodies. So now to discuss all this, I'm joined by Dana Berkowitz, an author of the upcoming book, Botox Nation. Can you talk to me a little bit about it and why you were interested in the topic?
Sure. I was still a graduate student and I was living in Gainesville, Florida. And my friends were all living in New York and Los Angeles and Miami, and they were working in these, you know, very high-paying jobs, or at least they seemed like high-paying in comparison to my graduate student salary. And we came home to Miami, where I grew up, and we all met at a party. And one of my girlfriends pulled us aside, and she said to us, you know, guess what I did today? I got Botox. And I think the rest of us looked at her like she was crazy. I think we were 28 years old, and we were like, why in the world would you do this? I decided that I was going to start writing this book about Botox, and that's the inception of it.
So you yourself have had Botox?
I have.
Can you talk a little bit about that decision? Yeah. and what it was like for you and why you didn't?
Absolutely. So it's actually quite serendipitous that we're having this conversation today, because tomorrow, for the very first time, I am going to come out to my students in my women's and gender studies class.
Nice.
As somebody who uses Botox. I began researching this book in 2010, and I was 31. What I was doing during this time was I interviewed cosmetic surgeons, I interviewed dermatologists, and in these interviews I asked them to point out which of my wrinkles could be Botox, which of my lines could be lasered, and it was quite agonizing.
That sounds terrible.
It was terrible. And then even worse, I did an analysis of media messages about Botox, where for the better part of a year, I read women's magazines. So I can really see how women are just so inundated with these messages that they're not good enough and they can always be better. And then I also interviewed lots of young women who used Botox, some of whom were my friends. And they told me that I was stupid and that I was foolish for not trying Botox. I secretly pleased, but also like incredibly overcome with guilt and shame about this decision. I as a feminist, I felt like I had completely like failed. And so I was really felt this humiliation that I had capitulated to these. So here I am, a dedicated feminist committed to challenging gender inequality. And I am actively and knowingly participating in this very oppressive beauty culture.
What's sort of the difference between something like Botox and other facial fillers?
And the main difference is that, you know, dermal fillers, they plump the face. They don't paralyze the face. And so when you paralyze the face and you inhibit your ability to make these movements, I think that's something we need to talk about, that, you know, women aren't allowed to look angry and bitchy. That's a problem.
Let's talk about Hollywood.
Yeah.
We don't want women, female celebrities to age. But if they do have surgery or fillers to sort of adhere to those beauty standards, we're upset with them. Like, we want them to look young, but we don't want to know that they're getting Botox.
And, right. They have to look natural. They're supposed to get Botox.
And isn't that term so interesting, right? Like, keeping yourself up, not letting yourself
aging
go.
Gracefully.
Right.
Right. And it's you know, this really implicates, you know, women who don't have the economic means to do this.
Mm.
Because where we're being told that we should use Botox or we should take care of ourselves and we should get all these facials and use all these facial creams, right? So when you have this increase in medical spas and in, you know, like, you know, we have Groupons that sell Botox now and give you these bargain deals on, you know, these cosmetic procedures.
Botox parties,
all of these things where you get in this deal. And this is to entice women of less economically privileged backgrounds to participate in this Botox culture. But what oftentimes happens is the work is more visible, and therefore they're more penalized for doing the same things that wealthier women are doing. It's
right.
Just, you know, much more invisible on their faces.
Right.
Because they can afford it.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
Throughout history, people have been obsessed with youth. We have found Botox. In Hollywood especially, female celebrities are expected to stay youthful, but not in a noticeable way. If we can tell someone had work done, we shame them. But it's amazing that we not just expect women to look young and beautiful, but effortlessly so. When I was younger, I was extraordinarily judgmental about cosmetic procedures. I didn't understand why people would do this to themselves. And, you know, of course, I knew that women were judged, but I didn't consider the toll that judgment can take on you, especially as you get older. So to my younger self, I would say, mind your own business when it comes to people's faces and bodies. So now to discuss all this, I'm joined by Dana Berkowitz, an author of the upcoming book, Botox Nation. Can you talk to me a little bit about it and why you were interested in the topic?
Sure. I was still a graduate student and I was living in Gainesville, Florida. And my friends were all living in New York and Los Angeles and Miami, and they were working in these, you know, very high-paying jobs, or at least they seemed like high-paying in comparison to my graduate student salary. And we came home to Miami, where I grew up, and we all met at a party. And one of my girlfriends pulled us aside and she said to us, you know, guess what I did today? I got Botox. And I think the rest of us looked at her like she was crazy. I think we were 28 years old and we were like, why in the world would you do this? I decided that I was going to start writing this book about Botox. And that's the inception of it.
So you yourself have had Botox?
I have.
Can you talk a little bit about that decision? Yeah. and what it was like for you and why you didn't?
Absolutely. So it's actually quite serendipitous that we're having this conversation today, because tomorrow, for the very first time, I am going to come out to my students in my women's and gender studies class.
Nice.
As somebody who uses Botox. I began researching this book in 2010, and I was 31. What I was doing during this time was I interviewed cosmetic surgeons, I interviewed dermatologists, and in these interviews I asked them to point out which of my wrinkles could be Botox, which of my lines could be lasered, and it was quite agonizing.
That sounds terrible.
It was terrible. And then even worse, I did an analysis of media messages about Botox, where for the better part of a year, I read women's magazines. So I can really see how women are just so inundated with these messages that they're not good enough and they can always be better. And then I also interviewed lots of young women who use Botox, some of whom were my friends. And they told me that I was stupid and that I was foolish for not trying Botox. I secretly pleased, but also like incredibly overcome with guilt and shame about this decision. I, as a feminist, I felt like I had completely like failed. And so I was really felt this humiliation that I had capitulated to these. So here I am, a dedicated feminist committed to challenging gender inequality. And I am actively and knowingly participating in this very oppressive beauty culture.
What's sort of the difference between something like Botox and other facial fillers?
And the main difference is that, you know, dermal fillers, they plump the face. They don't paralyze the face. And so when you paralyze the face and you inhibit your ability to make these movements, I think that's something we need to talk about, that, you know, women aren't allowed to look angry and bitchy. That's a problem.
Let's talk about Hollywood.
Yeah.
We don't want women, female celebrities to age. But once if they do have surgery or fillers to sort of adhere to those beauty standards, we're upset with them. Like, we want them to look young, but we don't want to know that they're getting Botox.
And, right. They have to look natural. They're supposed to get Botox.
And isn't that term so interesting, right? Like, keeping yourself up, not letting yourself
aging
go.
Gracefully.
Right.
Right. And it's you know, this really implicates, you know, women who don't have the economic means to do this.
Mm.
Because where we're being told that we should use Botox or we should take care of ourselves and we should get all these facials and use all these facial creams, right? So when you have this increase in medical spas and in, you know, like, you know, we have Groupons that sell Botox now and give you these bargain deals on, you know, these cosmetic procedures.
Botox parties,
all of these things where you're getting this deal. And this is to entice women of less economically privileged backgrounds to participate in this Botox culture. But what oftentimes happens is the work is more visible, and therefore they're more penalized for doing the same things that wealthier women are doing. It's
right.
Just, you know, much more invisible on their faces.
Right, right,
because
right.
They can afford it.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 2. Tarea 3. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
Playground Politics, the truth of parents' WhatsApp groups. Does anyone know if there's a half day tomorrow? And anyone else struggling to understand the maths tonight? Did anyone take Sersha's jumper by mistake? At its best, the class WhatsApp group offers connection in the fast-paced, multitasking world of modern parenting. At its worst, it spreads misinformation and pits parents against school staff. It got out of control pretty quickly, one Cork mum confides, referring to a petition started on their class WhatsApp group recently, aimed at removing a newly appointed principal following an incident. It became a sort of campaign to get rid of him. It was a WhatsApp mob, and nobody was willing to step up and put a stop to it. People mentioned their right to know, commenting on the principal's apparent shortcomings. There was an us versus them tone to everything. Comments began with, "Everybody thinks, that kind of thing," she says. Looking back on it now, there were one or two vocal, angry parents, and the rest of us got lost in the tide. One Waterford principal, who acknowledges there are positives for parents on class WhatsApp groups, has a clear defense strategy when the mood turns hostile. "I refuse to meet parents as representatives of a wider group, unless it's the parents' association. So if a parent says everyone is saying that, I insist on meeting each parent who wants to speak about it. It usually turns out there's only one." Staff at Presentation College Carlo recently became the victims of damaging and unchecked gossip online. Girls who were wearing leggings were reminded of the official dress code late last year. Soon, false reports of male teachers' discomfort that this clothing was making them uncomfortable multiplied online. The story, based on rumor rather than fact, dominated newspapers and radio shows. The press ombudsman recently upheld a complaint by the school principal who said the allegations were false. Ray Murray said the school originally declined to comment on the controversy as it did not want to provide fuel for the fire of a non-story frenzy circulating on social media. He ended up going on national radio to point out that what was being claimed online was incorrect. Such findings, however, gained far less traction than the original controversy. Teachers and principals say much of their time is increasingly given over to correcting fake news or scaremongering over issues ranging from use of technology to sex and relationships education. A legal precedent was set in 2017 when Roisin Kaur, music teacher at St. Joseph's Grammar School in Donemore, secured a public apology from a parent who posted defamatory comments on her personal Facebook account. Campaigners believe the case could prompt more teachers to seek legal action over parents' online comments. A Dublin principal of a large secondary school says parents are often very careless with what they put into writing. "My big worry is when they start to mention an individual teacher. I have a duty of care towards that teacher. I've had to email parents, warning them about the dangers of posting libelous, discoverable comments. I also rely on individual parents who keep me informed if phones are lighting up at night. It happens organically with every group. There's always a decent person with everyone's best interest at heart. At its most extreme, online misinformation can kill. The case of Samuel Paty in France serves as a stark reminder. A 13-year-old girl told her father that she'd been asked to leave the room while her teacher showed them cartoon pictures of the Prophet Muhammad during a class on free speech and blasphemy. Later, it was revealed that the girl was absent that day. She confessed to reporters, "I didn't see the cartoons, it was a girl in my class who showed me them." The father filed a legal complaint against the teacher, embarking on a social media campaign wherein he identified Paty and the school in Conflans-Saint-Honorin, west of Paris. Prosecutors established a direct causal link between the online campaign against Paty and his death. After Paty's murder by beheading, French President Emmanuel Macron presented the teacher's family with the nation's highest honor, the Légion d'honneur. One principal recalls an incident where he ended up advising a parent like he might a child experiencing cyberbullying. "In Dublin as a class teacher it became a thing with a particularly bad class I had, parent-wise. One parent emailed me looking for advice on something that had come up on their WhatsApp group. I advised her to leave the group." A Cork-based principal also sees a comparison with school bullying and online campaigns. Many schools in Ireland educate staff and students on the necessity to avoid blaming, shaming and comparing in their relationships, online or otherwise. These practices happen frequently on WhatsApp groups. Parents aren't in the class and they're not the students. There's a dynamic of entitlement on them where people feel they've a right to know why a member of staff is absent, say. There may be complex and personal details involved, as is the case in any workplace. Another principal in Carlow compares the bullying of staff on WhatsApp to road rage. "We're all happy to shout and gesticulate at the wheel, but we're unlikely to hurl the same abuse facing someone. WhatsApp is us shouting together from behind one wheel. So, is there any solution?" Principals say contacting schools directly about concerns rather than letting them mushroom online is one approach. Another option, some say, is educating parents. Professor James O'Higgins Norman of DCU and UNESCO's chair on tackling bullying in schools and cyberspace says parents especially need to be careful around how they behave. "There's a broader societal issue here. This is all very new to us adults. We must reflect on the example we're setting. We talk about what our children are doing online, but we don't reflect on our own behavior. We don't have an agreed etiquette," he said recently. The university runs an anti-bullying and online safety program called Fuse. It is used in more than 100 schools, reaching thousands of students and school staff. Fuse recognizes the need for adults to register the impact their online behavior can have, particularly in closed forums like WhatsApp. "We suggest that students host training sessions for their parents once they've completed the program. Schools can help facilitate that," he says. Lurkers or informers, which class WhatsApp tribe do you belong to? Research carried out by Massachusetts Institute of Technology in 2018 found that false stories are 70% more likely to spread on Twitter than the truth. A similar pattern can emerge on parents' WhatsApp groups. Such misinformation is often carried out by a vocal few, a well-established phenomenon of participation inequality. According to one report, up to 90% of users lurk, 9% communicate a little, and just 1%, dubbed by some as informers, provide most of the action. For example, Elad Gavari, a product manager, decided to run a statistical analysis on his own child's preschool parents' WhatsApp group. He found that one parent out of the group of 47 was responsible for more than a quarter of all messages. There's a lot at stake if parent-school relationships break down. Drawing upon data from more than 10,000 students, the University of Sussex found positive school-family relationships are a predictor of academic achievement. A 2021 Ipsos MRBI Veracity Index tracking public trust in key professions found that social media influencers are trusted by only 6% of the population. Teachers are trusted by 88%. Though suspicious of social media, the power of it seems enough to jolt parents out of their offline convictions. A study in the International Journal of Learning, Teaching and Educational Research into School WhatsApp Groups, which also included teachers, found that parents became over-involved in the school, while the informality of the channel made the relationship too close and led to message overload and misunderstandings. It found that there is no substitute for the continued existence of face-to-face communication channels that allow close contact, which creates trust and professional working relationships between parents and educators.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
Playground Politics, the truth of parents' WhatsApp groups. Does anyone know if there's a half day tomorrow? And anyone else struggling to understand the maths tonight? Did anyone take Sersha's jumper by mistake? At its best, the class WhatsApp group offers connection in the fast-paced, multitasking world of modern parenting. At its worst, it spreads misinformation and pits parents against school staff. It got out of control pretty quickly, one Cork mum confides, referring to a petition started on their class WhatsApp group recently, aimed at removing a newly appointed principal following an incident. It became a sort of campaign to get rid of him. It was a WhatsApp mob, and nobody was willing to step up and put a stop to it. People mentioned their right to know, commenting on the principal's apparent shortcomings. There was an us versus them tone to everything. Comments began with, "Everybody thinks, that kind of thing," she says. Looking back on it now, there were one or two vocal, angry parents, and the rest of us got lost in the tide. One Waterford principal, who acknowledges there are positives for parents on class WhatsApp groups, has a clear defense strategy when the mood turns hostile. "I refuse to meet parents as representatives of a wider group, unless it's the parents' association. So if a parent says everyone is saying that, I insist on meeting each parent who wants to speak about it. It usually turns out there's only one." Staff at Presentation College Carlo recently became the victims of damaging and unchecked gossip online. Girls who were wearing leggings were reminded of the official dress code late last year. Soon, false reports of male teachers' discomfort that this clothing was making them uncomfortable multiplied online. The story, based on rumor rather than fact, dominated newspapers and radio shows. The press ombudsman recently upheld a complaint by the school principal who said the allegations were false. Ray Murray said the school originally declined to comment on the controversy as it did not want to provide fuel for the fire of a non-story frenzy circulating on social media. He ended up going on national radio to point out that what was being claimed online was incorrect. Such findings, however, gained far less traction than the original controversy. Teachers and principals say much of their time is increasingly given over to correcting fake news or scaremongering over issues ranging from use of technology to sex and relationships education. A legal precedent was set in 2017 when Roisin Kaur, music teacher at St. Joseph's Grammar School in Donemore, secured a public apology from a parent who posted defamatory comments on her personal Facebook account. Campaigners believe the case could prompt more teachers to seek legal action over parents' online comments. A Dublin principal of a large secondary school says parents are often very careless with what they put into writing. "My big worry is when they start to mention an individual teacher. I have a duty of care towards that teacher. I've had to email parents, warning them about the dangers of posting libelous, discoverable comments. I also rely on individual parents, who keep me informed if phones are lighting up at night. It happens organically with every group. There's always a decent person with everyone's best interest at heart. At its most extreme, online misinformation can kill." The case of Samuel Paty in France serves as a stark reminder. A 13-year-old girl told her father that she'd been asked to leave the room while her teacher showed them cartoon pictures of the Prophet Muhammad during a class on free speech and blasphemy. Later, it was revealed that the girl was absent that day. She confessed to reporters, "I didn't see the cartoons, it was a girl in my class who showed me them." The father filed a legal complaint against the teacher, embarking on a social media campaign wherein he identified Paty and the school in Conflans-Saint-Honorin, west of Paris. Prosecutors established a direct causal link between the online campaign against Paty and his death. After Paty's murder by beheading, French President Emmanuel Macron presented the teacher's family with the nation's highest honor, the Légion d'honneur. One principal recalls an incident where he ended up advising a parent like he might a child experiencing cyberbullying. "In Dublin as a class teacher it became a thing with a particularly bad class I had, parent-wise. One parent emailed me looking for advice on something that had come up on their WhatsApp group. I advised her to leave the group." A Cork-based principal also sees a comparison with school bullying and online campaigns. Many schools in Ireland educate staff and students on the necessity to avoid blaming, shaming and comparing in their relationships, online or otherwise. These practices happen frequently on WhatsApp groups. Parents aren't in the class and they're not the students. There's a dynamic of entitlement on them where people feel they've a right to know why a member of staff is absent, say. There may be complex and personal details involved, as is the case in any workplace. Another principal in Carlo compares the bullying of staff on WhatsApp to road rage. "We're all happy to shout and gesticulate at the wheel, but we're unlikely to hurl the same abuse facing someone. WhatsApp is us shouting together from behind one wheel. So, is there any solution?" Principals say contacting schools directly about concerns rather than letting them mushroom online is one approach. Another option, some say, is educating parents. Professor James O'Higgins Norman of DCU and UNESCO's chair on tackling bullying in schools and cyberspace says parents especially need to be careful around how they behave. There's a broader societal issue here. This is all very new to us adults. We must reflect on the example we're setting. We talk about what our children are doing online, but we don't reflect on our own behavior. We don't have an agreed etiquette, he said recently. The university runs an anti-bullying and online safety program called FUSE. It is used in more than 100 schools, reaching thousands of students and school staff. FUSE recognizes the need for adults to register the impact their online behavior can have, particularly in closed forums like WhatsApp. We suggest that students host training sessions for their parents once they've completed the program. Schools can help facilitate that, he says. Lurkers or informers, which class WhatsApp tribe do you belong to? Research carried out by Massachusetts Institute of Technology in 2018 found that false stories are 70% more likely to spread on Twitter than the truth. A similar pattern can emerge on parents' WhatsApp groups. Such misinformation is often carried out by a vocal few, a well-established phenomenon of participation inequality. According to one report, up to 90% of users lurk, 9% communicate a little, and just 1%, dubbed by some as informers, provide most of the action. For example, Elad Gavari, a product manager, decided to run a statistical analysis on his own child's preschool parents' WhatsApp group. He found that one parent out of the group of 47 was responsible for more than a quarter of all messages. There's a lot at stake if parent-school relationships break down. Drawing upon data from more than 10,000 students, the University of Sussex found positive school-family relationships are a predictor of academic achievement. A 2021 Ipsos MRBI Veracity Index tracking public trust in key professions found that social media influencers are trusted by only 6% of the population. Teachers are trusted by 88%. Though suspicious of social media, the power of it seems enough to jolt parents out of their offline convictions. A study in the International Journal of Learning, Teaching and Educational Research into School WhatsApp Groups, which also included teachers, found that parents became over-involved in the school, while the informality of the channel made the relationship too close and led to message overload and misunderstandings. It found that there is no substitute for the continued existence of face-to-face communication channels that allow close contact, which creates trust and professional working relationships between parents and educators.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 3. Aquí acaba la prueba de comprensión oral. Por favor, siga las instrucciones del profesorado en su aula.